好吃。
Hello and welcome back to Tuesday with the Taskmaster. I'm your host, Paul Bromwell, and I'm excited to be here. This drops the day after Christmas, and I can't do it, first of all, without the man himself, Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, the devil. He's here, but we can't do it, Kevin, without all our awesome listeners who keep sending these great questions in. And so we're thankful and appreciative for you guys. But Kevin, how are you, man? How was your Christmas?
Good. And we couldn't do it without Santa.
Oh, who doesn't love Santa in their life at this time of year, bud?
Yeah. So everything's doing well. I wish everybody had a wonderful Christmas. As crazy as things are in the world, Christmas kind of brings us together. So I hope all of our listeners, and even if you don't listen to us, you had a great Christmas.
Yeah, so well said. This is the Christmas edition. Next weekend, we'll type the New Year's edition. It's hard to believe, man, we're going to be in 2024. Whoever thought, like when we used to watch movies like Back to the Future and they were talking about the 2020s and it was like, oh, that seems like forever. And here we are getting ready to go into 2024.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's something. It's crazy. It is. Well, listen, we are going to jump right into the questions this week because we got a lot of great questions. There was some folks that put questions on the prior week's episode. So I went back and grabbed those and I'll continue to do that, guys. If you're late ads as far as questions, especially since he and Kevin and I are taping a little bit earlier with the holidays, no, not to fear. I'll make sure I go back and grab those. So we're going to start this week, Kevin, with Lauren Eason. And he says, what was it like for you to work with the New Japan talent when they first came over to WCW?
Really well. I think I've told you this before. I don't try to take claim for a lot of stuff, but the Japanese connection was mine. When they were doing the connection, they told her, bring Kevin.
Okay, so they asked for you specifically as be part of that deal. Yeah.
Eric wanted to bring somebody else. He said, no, bring Kevin.
Nice.
And
was there someone in particular you were close with over there? Did you have like a connection or a couple connections?
I had been over there so well. I knew their culture.
Okay.
When you go, see, Americans are the dirty, nasty Americans.
Right.
Somebody gives you their business card, you study it like it's going to be a test. You look, turn it over. Oh, very good, very good. It's you all. You make a big thing of them. It shows that we're being subservient, but not over subservient because, hey, what we did in the war, right?
Yeah, it's just respect, too. Respect.
Yeah, it's still there. You know what I mean?
I'm sure that's true.
And I had been over there so long that they knew I went right to them with that. We flew to Hawaii, which was terrific. We stayed, I think, 5 days. I went diving. We had a great time. But I sat down with them. I asked for a meeting. You asked for a meeting to have a meeting. You know, and you ask for the meeting, and then, yes, we'll have a meeting. Then you have to ask again, then you have it. And I said to them, they said, what about the guys on TV? How are you going to use them? I said, I want to use and put them over unless everyone goes over, unless there's a conflict. I said, the only one I'll beat, because they told me this, was Norton.
Scott Norton, yeah.
Yeah, because there was rumors that they were going to bring Goldberg over there, and I was going to have a different finish for Bill and Scott. And okay. They said, oh, very good, very good. He said, then you send it over to us, we can show. He said, you have Guy Gene interfering where Scott should have won, even though Scott was a heel. They accepted, you know, Japanese wrestling is a different type. They respect the athletes.
Yeah.
So.
So you honored your word. They had some expectations. You said, no problem, I'm going to honor your word. And there was a mutual respect from the get-go. And part of it sounds like, Kevin's because they trusted you and you knew their culture.
And Watts had destroyed them.
And Watts had destroyed them. Oh, boy, I bet.
Watts had destroyed them, so I had to make...
You had to be the bridge.
Yeah, and I had to do some things over. And Eric did a hell of a job, too.
You were a good tag team, you and Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was funny. I thought, here's Watts. And the more I think about it, the guy, I think when they hired him, he wanted to get fired.
He was when they hired who, Bill Watts, when they hired him, his goal was to get fired?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Pissing off the balcony.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, that story. What was it? In that North Tower or something? He pissed off and about?
No, the North Tower people there for meetings.
Yeah.
I got to go to the bathroom.
And he pisses off the side of the balcony or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you might have been. Somebody told me that story. I think it was you. It was either you or Arn.
And, what you said about Hank Aaron.
Oh, my. Yeah. So they needed you. They needed you, and they needed Eric to smooth it all over.
Well, they needed Eric. He did. As time goes by, I look the incredible job he did.
Really, you have so, and I love that you say that. So, really, as you sit in retrospect, you really realize, man, Eric. You know, for all the shit he takes, he was influential and made a lot of good stuff happen for WCW. Is that fair to say?
Let me ask you this.
All right, this is going to be good, I can tell.
I don't know if I'm stepping out of the line. Eric was the third string announcer.
Yeah.
People barely said hello to him. 3 years later, or 2.5 years later, he was running the company. It beat Vince McMahon, who had a 30-year or almost a 30-year head start.
A stranglehold on the business, yep.
I mean, he did a remarkable, remarkable job. Incredible. And at first, I was like some of the other guys.
Like, who does this guy think he is, kind of?
No, he was always nice at first. You know, then he got a little sour like everybody else when they get screwed.
Okay.
He would be saying, you know, help me with this. I mean, he was very good. And the only mistake he made was a period, I believe anyway, when he first started, he started listening to everybody. And that's a hard thing to do.
Listening to the talent.
I've never had many guys come in to me and say, I got 7 ideas for 7 guys.
Oh, boy.
But he was great, and we had a great time, and it was one of the best times I had at WCW.
That's good. All right, David Fake is up next. He said, did Kevin ever have a chance to get in the ring with Nick Bockwinkel? I often feel that Nick gets overlooked when talking about the greatest champions of all time. He was a scientific wrestler, yet was a no-doubt heel because he exuded so much arrogance. Only Bret Hart has ever been able to do the same. So, Nick Bockwinkel, Kevin, did you ever get a chance to be in the ring with him?
No, I didn't. And I only met him one time in Hawaii. And we got off the corner and had a nice talk. And then I met him in a couple of other shows where he became whatever position they gave him. But, you know, he's a second generation. His father was Warren Bockwinkel, who is a tremendous, tremendous performer. Nick was, the way Nick worked, it was like watching a guy work with silk. He could make anybody look great.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask next, is what did you think of him as a worker? But, man, all I remember, again, I was a child growing up and seeing Nick Bockwinkel with the AWA champion, was that I just hated him. So you know what? That means he played his role well. He was the ultimate heel.
And let me tell you this. Paul, you know, they killed the AWA.
Yes.
And Hogan left, right?
Yeah.
You think they would even draw that kind of money if Hogan was working with somebody else? He made Hogan.
Burn.
And, I mean, he carried him. And I'm not knocking Hulk Hogan. People sometimes tell me, oh, he can't work. Watch his Japanese matches.
Yes.
He's terrific.
That's he and Muda. Yeah.
I've told you about keeping my being ill. When I saw him do that, I said, boy, he's the third guy. You know, when people said, could there have been another third guy? Absolutely not. But he was... He didn't get his due either. I'll tell you why, I believe. See if you agree with me. Rick's the NWA champion. He starts off in Portland on a Monday. Tuesday, he goes to San Francisco. Wednesday, he's in L.A. Thursday, he's in St. Louis. Friday, he's in Amarillo or Dallas. Nick only wrestled in the local towns that Vern owned.
Okay, yeah.
So a lot, and he didn't get the publicity.
Or the opportunity to be all over the country.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And then WCW would bring him in as Arn and I have been covering in the early 90s as a figurehead. he was a little bit of a figurehead there for a little while. So, and sometimes, you know, with the wrestling fans, that's kind of, if they didn't have exposure or were able to watch AWA, that's maybe all that they understood of who Nick Bockwinkel was. But yes, long time AWA guy. Bobby Heenan was his manager for a while there in AWA too. So,
and Bobby was a terrific worker.
Yes.
Terrific.
Before he was taking bumps in the big blue cage in WWF, he was working in AWA. So, all right. William Weisskopf is up next, and he says, with WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia, do you think there will be any ECW legends in this year's Hall of Fame class? If so, who? And Kevin, just as we're getting to record this, Dave Meltzer has reported that Triple H is now, it's like, I don't know if it's official, whatever, is kind of the one picking Hall of Famers. He's at the controls now, making the decision. He is the decision maker for who goes into the Hall of Fame. And the post that I was looking at said, hey, maybe this is the opportunity for guys like Lex Luger, Demolition, Jim Cornette, The Midnight Express, Sid, Bam Bam Bigelow, and ECW. Part of the ECW, and some overdue legends to finally make it into the WWE Hall of Fame. What about ECW? Do you think they have a shot of having anybody go into the Hall of Fame?
Well, as time goes by, the thing that's left over is the chant ECW. The guys get lost. People didn't see the work. It's hard, but there are guys from their era that should be in the Hall of Fame. Terry Funk should be put in the Hall of Fame as an ECW guy. You know, I know Terry's in there anyway, but he should be in there again. Shane Douglas, I mean, There's a bunch.
RVD's already in. He went in as a WWE, but I mean, I'm sure they did. If I can remember the highlight package, I'm sure they incorporated ECW highlights. But there are some guys. I think it would also probably have to be guys that were in ECW that then continued to transcend their career elsewhere.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, but there's a lot of talented guys. Could you imagine Sabu going in to the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I can't believe that he's not in there.
Well, here we go. That'd be cool. William goes on. He said, Kevin, we all know the famous story of Hiro Matsuda breaking Hulk Hogan's leg to see if he was committed to the business and if he would come back. We all know he did and proved his toughness, but was he considered a tough guy among the boys? During your many times working with him throughout the years, did you witness anyone ever confronting or testing Hogan backstage? Just curious.
No, because they knew if they got stiff with him, they wouldn't get another match with him.
Their push was over.
And their push was over, baby. But, you know, he came from a pretty... I knew him before he was a full-time wrestler. I knew when he used to play at the Rocket Lounge, and we all used to go and see him play. And, you know, he was a tough kid on the street. But once he made it, and he made it instantly, you know, when he went to Continental after they sent him out of Tampa, the people knew not to mess with him if they paycheck wanted to go down.
He said, William said, you always hear some guys knocking Hogan nowadays, but I don't remember any stories of altercations involving Hogan. You're right. Was it fear of retribution from the office, or was Hogan considered a tough guy? And to your point, it's probably a mix of both.
I want you to look back when Hulk first started, even before when he first went up to New York, before he got to become champion, how big he was. I mean, he was a monster. Maybe He couldn't have touched Ming or Bob, but he gives anybody else a fight.
Intimidating, man.
Yeah.
You thought about Hulk Hogan and the other Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, back in those days. I mean, they were both jacked monsters. Adam Krasnoff is up next. Lou Albano, Captain Lou, had a reputation for being a real loose cannon when he drank. Do you have any memories of Captain Lou when he was hitting the vodka bottle?
I was in Boston for my first time ever. I just got into the territory. I'm really excited, right? And I forget who I was working with, but I was going over, and Lou said, "Listen, what I want you to do is, in the middle of your comeback, hit me in the face because I'm gonna." And he pulled out a bobby pin, a baby that stuck it through his cheek.
Oh, God, help me! No.
And he said, "That one will get juice right away when you hit it." I said, "Oh, God."
So like a safety pin kind of deal?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. And he put it in his cheek.
It's actually deeper because it's a diaper pin, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Twice the size. Yeah.
Was he on the sauce or what? That's just normally him.
He was always on the sauce. Let me tell you a funny story. He used to go to like a local store that a deli, and the people loved his wife. And Lou would go down the aisle and he would grab a six pack, open it up, drink the six pack, get meat, shove the meat in his mouth, get a dessert, and end up buying a piece of Little Debbie cake or something. And his wife would let him go out of the store, and she'd pay for it.
So he was like eating and drinking on his way down the aisles, and she would just pay for it by the time he got to the car.
The closest thing to Animal House I've ever seen.
Lou Albano. Yeah. It's good stuff. Oh, man. Adam goes on. He said, according to Wikipedia, before the Spring Stampede 1994 pay-per-view aired, this is a good one, actors Danny Bonaducci and Christopher Knight competed in a non-televised match, which Bonaducci won. The next dark match that followed saw Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond defeat Kevin and Dave Sullivan, which Dave Sullivan injured his knee during the match. But my question is, Kevin, do you have any recollection of this Brady Bunch versus Partridge Family match? If so, how in the world did it come about? It was never advertised on TV, and to this day, no footage of it exists or has been released. Do you remember this?
Thank God. But the only thing I can think of, they were trying to reach out to different television network and syndication.
And wasn't Danny a big time, always like a radio guy too?
Oh, so huge in Chicago.
Yeah.
Huge in Chicago. And do you remember he used to do celebrity boxing?
Yes, that's it.
He did pretty big in celebrity boxing.
So it was probably, hey, WCW, we'll promote you on all our outlets in a dark match. Can we have Danny and you know, Christopher Knight, a.k.a. Peter, come on and have a match?
Yeah.
And I guess they probably had to sign a lot of waivers, so WCW isn't held against them if they get hurt.
And one of the things about him, he took his job serious.
Yeah.
I admire that.
That's cool. Dylan's up next, and he says, Mr. Sullivan, if you had the chance to change one of your booking decisions from any point in your career, what would it be? He's like, oh, boy, let me get the mouse trap going here.
There's so many of them. But We almost went too far with Sting being in the balcony for that.
Okay.
It turned out all right, but if we went another 6 weeks.
Just dragging it out of him just staring up, standing and staring up there? Yeah. Okay.
It would have worn itself out, I believe.
Who was the mastermind behind timing and booking? Was that you and Eric together? Was it you? Like, what would that look like?
I put the card together, and then the guys would get together and go to Eric and decide what they want.
Okay.
Didn't have much problems with.
But it was like you guys kind of mapped out the timeline, because you said, thankfully, we didn't go too long. But you would have had to map out, hey, let's do it on this show and then wait a week or maybe this show and kind of so that it made sense as you told the story. So that would have been you and then the guys, everybody working together, I guess.
Right, because you had to go week after week to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, to make it work right. And I was thinking about this today. Wrestling is on probably the biggest role in its life right now, right?
It is. It's coming up the hill on the roller coaster, that's for sure. Maybe on the top right now, for sure.
How long can that last? I mean, they have had the best from. I know I'm going to get a lot of heat when I say this. I was never a Giant Girls fan.
A Giant what fan?
Girls Wrestling.
Oh, Girls Wrestling? Okay.
They're fabulous.
Yeah.
They're fabulous. They got, and the wrestling they got from anybody they have on their card can work. I mean,
The work rate has gotten so good. But to me, it's like the storytelling too. Give the same effort. And I'm not talking about the performers. I'm talking about those that are doing creative. If you put the same effort into the women and the, you know, that you're doing with the guy, we just want to care. We want to be invested. Look at Timeless Toni Storm. She's been one of the up and coming characters on AEW, the black and white, her lines and comedic timing. And people love it, you know? So just give us characters, male, female, and stories we're in.
She's probably over the best there right now.
But right there, AEW, she's really done a nice job with her, or they've done a nice job booking her and with her character. Yep. So you just, and that's what you guys, and, you know, kind of bringing this full circle, that's what you did with Sting. You got us invested in his character, the appearances here and there. Oh my God, he's become the Crow. This is badass. The music, the lights. It was the package that got us invested. It was a dark character, and we were in.
Shouldn't we get credit for the Marvel movies then?
Oh, I mean, hey. Yeah. And the Sting stuff, well, Crow was out then, but the Marvel has taken off since the Sting. But yes, I think that has proven the show. We love the superhero. This culture does. We love the superhero. So, a wrestling historian is up next.
Oh,
he said, what's your favorite Starrcade match? Thanks in advance. Do you have an all-time favorite? Now, listen, this is going back way into the early 80s up until, you know, the late 90s there. Do you have a favorite Starrcade match of all time?
Can I? He's asked me basically, what was my favorite match?
Yeah, from a Starrcade. Yeah,
and I won't go to Starrcade, but I'll go to the first Clash.
Okay.
Rick made Sting.
Oh yeah, they still talk about it.
Incredible match,
Greensboro.
Yeah, and Sting was ready. He was ready. It was tremendous.
We didn't start the show, Kevin, with current wrestling. We got right into the questions, but I knew we would get there sometime. but I don't know if you've seen it or not, but they've had to start opening up sections in Greensboro for the March 3rd Sting's last match. Again, we're going, he's going home to where he was made for his last match for that AEW Revolution pay-per-view, because they've already sold so many tickets to that event. I think almost 13,000 have sold. So they're now opening up even more tickets. That's going to be a heck of a show.
Yes, it is. And he rightfully deserves it. And definitely. Rick does too.
To be there for it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be something.
It's going to end that way.
Someone asked Arn if he's gonna be there or checking it out. He said, one way or the other, if I'm there, I'm there. If I'm not, I'll be home, but I'll be enjoying watching it. Because Sting is one of those guys, one of the few, that anybody you talk to, Kevin, they have a lot of respect for. And he has just made a big impression on a lot of guys in a good way, a good impression. You can't say that about a lot of guys. But with Sting, he's just different, he seems like.
And I'm going to tell you something. I've never heard a bad story about Sting.
Right.
I've never heard that he did a horrible mistake or something like that. He's a wonderful guy. He probably goes home at night and opens up these chipmunks that he's got in the yard. But he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And his longevity being on top, it was very nice to see what he's done.
It's almost that reverence that you see with Undertaker. You also see it with Sting. It's almost a reverence type feeling. Matt S. is up next. He said, after Hulk Hogan joined WCW, a match or feud with Vader looked like a moneymaker, but at the January 94 Clash of the Champions, after Hogan and Randy Savage had beaten Kevin and the Butcher, Vader did a run-in and Hogan no-sold a powerbomb. Wouldn't it have made more sense for Vader to left Hogan Lang as a build-up for their matches?
Yeah, but Hogan had, complete creative control.
There you go.
And he didn't want people to think he had lost a step.
That's the answer in a nutshell at that point. There's really nothing else you could do with the Hogan Vader. If Hogan's not willing at that point, right, to show that he lost his step or show weakness, it's not going to work with Vader. He's a badass.
Or even getting screwed. Leon was a problem child in some ways, but I really liked Leon. And he would try to do anything he could do to help you out. But it was one of those things that he tried to bully guys for no reason sometimes with Rick. At the time he had to wrestle Rick, and then the same thing with Hogan. You don't have to plow them like you put them through a meat grinder, and that's what he would do.
Right. We, watching back some stuff with him and Flair, you want to talk about some physical confrontations. Flair would take a beating from him.
Yeah. Did you ever, of course, Hanson and him?
Oh, Harley Race, yeah.
No, Hanson.
I thought you said handsome. Yeah, handsome Harley Race. No, Stan Hansen and Vader. What about Mick Foley and Vader? They would kill each other.
Oh, and here's something. They did an angle that Killer Kowalski did 25 years prior, and they ran the angle for 25 years. We didn't even recognize that he lost is here.
How do you not do that? That's got to show that you got to tell that story.
Yeah, we didn't
right.
do it. It was the one in Germany where he lost. Yeah.
Adam Krasnoff is up next. He said, do you have a favorite Twilight Zone episode from the original series?
Yeah, I love the original series. I love the one where this girl is supposedly unbelievably ugly, and she goes to all these places to get worked on. It doesn't happen. At the end, she goes to this place where they're gonna definitely solve the problem, where they take off the mask, you're all in horror. Oh my God, oh my God. It was Ursula Andrews. The rest of them were freaks. You know, the people were freaks.
Okay, crazy. Yeah. Ursula Andrews, I just Googled her, born 1936. I definitely recognize her.
Yeah.
She was a pretty girl.
Yeah.
She was a Bond girl.
From Sweden, I think.
Yeah, she was. She was from Sweden, a Swiss actress, former model and sex symbol. And her breakthrough was a Bond girl, Honey Rider, in the first James Bond film in 1962. There you go.
Wow.
So, all right. Lauren Eason's up next. He said, if things have been different, could Bam Bam Bigelow been the WCW heavyweight champion?
I thought he was one of the greatest big men of all times. He could have been, but politically, I don't think he knew how to play the game that well to become champion.
And that was a part of it, man, back then, wasn't it?
Big part.
That's why I think it's fun. That's why it's interesting too. You wonder as a fan, how come this guy was never champ and how come that guy was never champ? They were good. They had a character. They could move. Right. And then, you know, talk to guys like you. It's like, well, they didn't know how, what they were doing backstage or how to act or who to talk to or whatever the case might be. So, Lauren says, how does Kevin feel about the media scrums for wrestling companies like WWE and AEW? So we're seeing a lot of these post pay-per-view press conference style media scrums. Do you like those?
Why don't they have a fight in the middle of the ring after the match?
Why don't they have a fight in the middle of the ring after the match?
Are you talking about like the scrum?
I'm talking about like, so after the events are over, then Triple H or Tony Khan will go back and they'll meet writers that'll come ask questions for them about how the event went, like a post show. Like they do after football games and stuff where they meet the press. He says, how do you feel about those? Cause they're doing them now for WWE and AEW after the shows are over and they answer questions about the press. Triple H will talk about the crowd size and how they're happy with everything and the money.
I think that's a great idea.
You like them? Okay. Cause they make it feel, it's more like a boxing event afterwards and UFC and stuff like that.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
I think it's the more realism we try to put into the sport, the better it's going to be. And I just noticed, and too, have you noticed lately in the last 6 months, the interviews have changed where they're saying, oh, we had a good match tonight, love to work with you again. Where now they're knocking one another, I think it's fabulous.
And not only that, too, the media scrums provide their own clickbait and storytelling and narrative and the buzz on social. As soon as they're done, everybody's putting out all the sound bites. So it's almost a continuation of the storytelling once the event storytelling's done. It's great.
Right. I think you're right.
Yep. He has a three-part question for you here. Do you regret that David Arquette was WCW champion?
Yeah.
Okay. What was to stop from having another celebrity champion like Dennis Rodman, Jay Leno, or Kevin Green from being the champion? Were those names discussed, or was David Arquette just a one-off?
David Arquette was a one-off. The only one that could have been a world champion was Kevin Green. Nobody tried harder than Kevin Green. He was fabulous.
As a Steeler fan, always loved Kevin Green. And now at that point, he was wearing his Carolina Panthers coat. Remember that jacket he would wear down to the ring with his turquoise? Yeah. But you know, and then he goes on, Lauren does, and says, what would have worked better if one of those mentioned celebrities was the WCW champion besides Arquette? And I think you just answered it. You would have loved to see, if we were going to have a celebrity, your choice, is it safe to say, it would be Kevin Green?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Terry Funk had an idea one time. You know who Ed Francis was? He was the tight end, the New England Patriots. Before Brock came along, he was the best.
Before Gronk came along, yeah.
Before Gronk came along, he was the best wide receiver they ever had. But his father owned Portland territory, and he also owned Oregon, and he also owned Hawaii. And Billy Russell's in the off season, and Terry wanted to drop the belt to him, and they said, "Why?" He said, "Because every time he lines up, there's gonna say, this Russ Francis, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion."
Notoriety.
Yeah, and he could wrestle
And
too.
he can wrestle. All right, Josh Clemens, he's up next. He said Kevin made a Seinfeld Festivus reference at the end of the last episode. What are some of his favorite Seinfeld moments?
The soup Nazi.
There you go. No soup for you. Oh. They're on Netflix. Me and my son started going back and watching them together. Not to when we were in San Francisco earlier this year, and it still hold. I mean, it's Seinfeld holds up. It's awesome. Craig Usher, any memories of working in Smoky Mountain Wrestling and your feud with Brian Lee?
Oh yeah, I worked. I used to. That was when I was working in Japan, and I was going to work for Jimmy and Paulie. And Jimmy, I'd go up like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and leave on Monday. Jimmy was super nice to me. Paulie was too. I really enjoyed it, hanging around with those guys. And every time I went up there, I had a real good time.
And what about Brian Lee? Any fond memories working with him?
Oh, Brian. Paul, let me ask you something.
Okay.
What do you think happened with Paul? Paul, what do you think happened with Brian? I mean, isn't he, wasn't he a catch? He did the fake.
He did the fake Undertaker, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the guy could work, and he was 6'7", I think. He
Six,
looked.
seven, 285 pounds. And I remember him as primetime Brian Lee in ECW.
So, what was he missing? I was around him and I worked with him. He seemed to have his stuff together.
He was part of the Disciples of Apocalypse for a little bit there too, when he came back from ECW to WWF, and then
Right.
after his run there for a little while, goes back into the independents till you know for a while. I don't get it either. He was a big man that could move. He spent a little time in TNA, and then that was it. Kind of just fizzled. His career fizzled out.
And he could talk too on the mic.
He actually, I just pulled up his Wikipedia page, and yeah, he was all over the place, Kevin. He wrestled in so many different territories, from Smoky Mountain, ECW, TNA, WWF, territories, you know, and so he's 57 years old now and lives in St. Petersburg. Well, he's born in St. Petersburg, Florida. I don't know where he resides now, but yeah, just had it all, to your point.
Yeah, I really liked him.
Yeah.
Great guy.
All right, we'll keep going here. Bobby KF5GTX, that was his call sign when he was in college. I'll never forget that. He said, what was the process like when you transitioned into creative? How difficult was it to balance and separate the two? So from active wrestler, Kevin, to now we're going to have you transition into creative. What did that look like for you?
Well, by the time I was 23, I was running a town in Florida. I was running Fort Myers, me and Dick Slater. Tampa ran on Tuesdays, and Fort Myers did too. And when it wasn't running well, they could send somebody down there and let them work out a program. So they did that with me and Dirty Dick. And we had a good time. We had a good time. So for me, it was just a series of progressions, which way I was turning and learning. And it was teaching me the business.
Right. So it wasn't a hard transition for you. You just knew, hey, it's time for me to stop wrestling, and I want to start getting into the behind the scenes bit part of it, the creative side.
But it took me 20 years to get all the way over there, you know.
I got you. Bryant Haremza is going to wrap us up this week, Kevin. He's got three questions. Number one. Having been out and worked the San Francisco territory, what is your opinion? What, in your opinion, made it so different and such a coveted territory to go to?
Because if you got over in San Francisco, you got over any place. I went into San Francisco after Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens and Chief Maivia left, and I came in there, and in 3 weeks we were doing 14,000 people.
Wow. In a local, in just a territory, out of a territory, 14,000.
And we did it with me and Bob Roop, two guys. We wrestled. Only time they had ever let two guys wrestle four times on top.
Man.
Yeah.
That's quite the legacy for to be able to say that.
Yeah. You know, people always think my work in Florida, but I enjoyed San Francisco more than any place. I was thinking about that today. Well, any place I've ever been.
Bryant says, in Kevin's opinion, can a foreign star really be successful in America without properly speaking English, or does a top foreign star have to speak English to succeed?
The world is shrinking so fast. They got a guy that isn't a Tommy. He's got a translator. In 2 years from now, he won't have a translator. They're hitting on all the cylinders. They're going to make everybody, a guy is a star, they're going to make sure he's speaking English.
I immediately thought of an old school guy. So great mood to write when he had Gary Hart. To me, you had a guy who didn't need to speak with a guy who could do all the talking, but he could be a star.
Right.
Nakamura, they're doing a lot of subtitles for him when he does his promos, backstage stuff and video production where they're putting the subtitles up for him. Sometimes I wonder, and I know Paul Heyman's all wrapped up in the bloodline, but if he had a mouthpiece like a Heyman that he was just a quiet, silent assassin that you didn't even need to think about whether you could understand him or not and just concentrate on this guy's a badass and you had that mouthpiece, I don't know. I think that could be something cool to see, but obviously he's wrapped up with club, and so that's not going to happen. What's your opinion on that?
Well, here's something I thought about. You know, when the Bloodline are in that room and they're talking and they're in the Roman's room and they're talking, and they kind of don't want Paul to hear what they're saying.
Right.
I think they should talk smaller to each other.
That would be fun.
Paul looked like, what did you guys say? Oh, nothing. It was just kidding around.
Just to add a wrinkle to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great. A creative twist. But do you think a guy, to wrap up, put a bow on this question, do you think they do have to speak fluent or at least understandable English for to be, you know, holding that world title nowadays?
It makes it a lot easier for them. It's going to be...
Especially for appearances and interviews and...
Yeah, it's going to be a hard way to go. But when they do it, it'll do it. It will turn out well. Because I do like the crawlers underneath. I like people speaking their own language. Hey, our grandkids are going to be speaking Mexican.
No, I know. Spanish, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
fluently. Last question from Bryant. Who is a territory wrestler that Kevin saw from his time in the territories that he thought could have been a big star, but that person refused to leave his home territory?
I think Brad Armstrong.
Leaving the South? He just didn't want to get out of the South?
Yeah. Brad was a fabulous performer. Fabulous.
There's not a time that I don't mention his name again, going back to Arn, because he was one of his close friends, where he doesn't get a twinkle in his eye when you say the name Brad Armstrong.
Yeah.
From a friendship, from a wrestling perspective, from everything, you can tell the special wrestlers when the wrestlers themselves get all the feels when you bring up their peers' names.
That's true. I mean, Brad and I were running mates. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. Great family. All of them are great. It was funny. They gave me the Continental belt down there, right? And I wrestled Brad and... What was the other one? He was in the tag teams a lot. Brad.
Scott Armstrong. Well, there was Brad. There was Scott Armstrong. There's. There's Brian. Brian James. The Road Dog.
Yeah. No. The one that was in the Smoking Gun. Not Smoking Guns. Southern Boys. You know who I'm talking about?
It's not Scott. It's, hold on. I got to look him up, but I know who you're talking about.
Well, anyway.
Steve Armstrong?
Steve, yeah.
Yep.
I wrestled them, and I wrestled their dad, and I beat every one of them week after week. What I was doing, I have Scott super kicked me after the match, every time, and the people carry me out of the ring. Just piss people off because they were so good at workers. They were the best.
Yeah, well trained too by their daddy, Bullet Bob. Yeah. And so Brad Armstrong is the answer to that one. Kevin, this has been a lot of fun. Another episode in the wraps. And I want to remind you guys too, you can follow Kevin on social media as we wrap up this week at Real Kev, K-E-V Sullivan. You can check him out on both Instagram and Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it nowadays, I believe X. And you just posted a picture on your social media of you and Mean Gene Okerlund. What a great picture that was of you two together back in the heyday. I also want to make sure that you know where you can buy the merch. That's right. You can get a tee. You can get a hoodie at TaskmasterTees.com. And support Tuesday with the Taskmaster over there at TaskmasterTees.com. You can see the devil himself Tuesday with the Taskmaster in a variety of colors. And, man, we are in hoodie season right now, so it's the perfect place to do that. And then also you can check out Kevin on Cameo. Cameo.com/TaskmasterKS. And you can have a live video message to you from our friend, the devil. He's on another level. He's Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, thank you so much for doing this with me this week.
And you can get Dark Side of the Ring, Ring Squared on Amazon.
There you go. That's the book that you like to always make sure we're aware of. So check out that book as well.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you, my friend, for carrying me again. So
it's easy. You are the one with all the great stories and memories, and we can't do this without you. And we also can't do this without our great listeners. We hope you've all had an enjoyable Christmas, that you continue to enjoy your week, that hopefully you're getting some time off. If not, hopefully we provided you a little entertainment while you do work. But on behalf of the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, this is Paul Bromwell, and we'll be right back here next week on another episode of Tuesday with the Taskmaster.
And I'd like to wish all our listeners happy Merry Christmas and coming up, Happy New Year. It'll be a great new year.
There you go. We'll see you next week, everybody.